Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Can fake news be confronted and defeated through the court system? That's the question for this week's Reliable Sources podcast. I'm your host, Brian Stelter. And this weekly podcast, in between our Sunday television program, is our chance to go more in-depth with media leaders and newsmakers, talking about some of the most important issues for the media industry and the future of news. This week, there was a very important settlement that you may not have heard about. It involved the Washington Times newspaper and Aaron Rich, the brother of the slain DNC staffer Seth Rich. As I'm sure you know, Seth Rich and the murder back in 2016 has given rise to all sorts of nutty conspiracy theories. But what happened this week with the Washington Times may point a way forward, may be a sign of a way to confront these conspiracy theories and actually make a difference. Mike Gottlieb is a partner at Boies Schiller Flexner. He's the attorney for Aaron Rich, and he joins me now from Washington. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I am desperate for some good signs that maybe there's something we all can do to confront lies and smears that spread on the web with incredible virality. This might be an example of that. Why don't you start for us at the beginning? Why did your client, Aaron Rich, sue the Washington Times back in March?
Well, Aaron really didn't want to sue the Washington Times or anyone else for that matter. He, before he filed this lawsuit, he attempted to engage with, and actually before the Washington Times had published the article that became the subject of the lawsuit, he attempted to engage with some of the individuals who had been spreading these lies about him online through various social media platforms privately and asked them to think about how they would feel if a member of their family had been murdered, and then they were accused of essentially covering up that murder, profiting off of the circumstances that led to it, and lying about it to the American people and to law enforcement. So he tried to engage with these folks privately. That actually led two of the defendants in our case, Matt Couch and Ed Butowski, to double down on their lies that they were telling about him in public. They said even worse things about him. Including one statement from defendant Matt Couch, something along the lines of, "Aaron, you don't even know what it means to be a brother," in a public broadcast he put up on his Periscope feed.
Jeez.
So Aaron attempted to resolve this privately. He attempted, you know, at the outset of when these lies started being spread, to kind of use the old-fashioned communications playbook of the family did, of engaging with the media. None of that really seemed to work. And when the Washington Times published this article, we've since learned that Ed Butowski and Matt Couch were instrumental in driving the publication of that article, when they published that article, Aaron then attempted to ask the Washington Times to retract it. They did not retract the article, and so he filed his lawsuit as a result in order to try to get some accountability and clear his name for the lies being spread about him.
And that brings us to the settlement deal. But first, about the Rich family. They've been having to deal with this stuff for the better part, for more than 2 years at this point. Sean Hannity of Fox News had spread conspiracy theories about the Rich murder. A lot of right-wing websites have been doing this. But it sounds like there was something the Washington Times did that was especially egregious, right, that gave you this opening to sue.
Well, so there have been multiple strains of this conspiracy theory. It sort of began as a conspiracy theory about Seth Rich being murdered as retribution for his role in leaking documents to WikiLeaks. Then that sort of came to a crescendo around May of 2017 when the Fox News story ran and then was retracted. The Rich family published an op-ed in the Washington Post around that time asking people to think about the effect that these kinds of lies were having on parents and a family grieving for a murdered son and a murder that hadn't been solved yet. And at that point, you know, I think a lot of people thought maybe this would die down because Fox had admitted that this story didn't meet its journalistic standards. In the summer of 2017, what happened was the private investigator who Ed Batowski had agreed to pay in order to supposedly to work to investigate the circumstances of the murder, filed a lawsuit against Ed Batowski and Fox News in New York in August. And the same day that that happened, Ed Batowski went out and gave a number of public interviews in which, for the first time, began to accuse Aaron Rich of having some involvement in this. And over the course of that month, in August of 2017, Matt Couch and his platform, America First Media, Ed Batowski, through participation in chats on their broadcasts and through Twitter, began to spread this story, which is entirely made up, that Aaron Rich was essentially the IT know-how behind Seth Rich's stealing of the documents, that Aaron Rich received money into his bank accounts by providing documents to WikiLeaks, that Aaron knew that his brother was going to be murdered ahead of time and did nothing to stop it, that Aaron even warned Seth's girlfriend that she should move from D.C. I mean, all of this stuff just completely made up, grotesque accusations about Aaron. And, you know, after that, Aaron tried to engage with these folks to get him to stop. They didn't stop and, in fact, encouraged The Washington Times to publish this article in early 2018. And that's really the sort of evolution of the story that led to the lawsuit.
I feel bad even hearing this crap. You must feel bad having to repeat it. But we do have to establish what's been out there and what it's been like for this previously private citizen to have to deal with.
That's right. And I think it's important to be precise about the allegations in this area of law, because there is an important distinction between sort of tinfoil hat theorizing or expressions of opinions based on circumstances that may be suspicious on the one hand, and accusations of criminal conduct or false factual statements on the other. And the latter category is something that is actionable, that's always been recognized under the law, under the First Amendment and defamation law, is actionable. And so the reason that we try to be precise about those accusations is to explain that this lawsuit and these types of lawsuits are not designed to stop people from expressing their viewpoints, their political viewpoints, their opinions. What they are designed to do is to stop people from dragging innocent individuals like Aaron through the mud and accuse them of committing gross crimes, making factual assertions about them that have no basis in fact and are false.
So the lawsuit comes in March. This is the lawsuit against the Washington Times. And what happened then? What happened between that point and now this settlement?
Well, so these things can take time, and litigation moves slowly. In some places, it's faster than it is in others, but this case has moved at a somewhat slow pace. And so it took a little bit of time to enter into discussions. I can't get into the details of our conversations, unfortunately, with the Washington Times. But, you know, what I can say is that, you know, their outside counsel was, you know, extremely professional and diligent. And we had lengthy discussions over a period of time in order to get to the place where we were able to reach an agreement that resulted in the retraction and the apology.
And my colleague Oliver Darcy at CNN broke the news of this settlement last Sunday. Take us through all the layers of it, because I know you can't say if there was money exchanged, but it's really revealing how robust, how strongly the Times is admitting fault here.
Yeah, I mean, I think oftentimes when you see an organization retract a story, it'll tend to be a one sentence or a two sentence sort of line that's buried in a section of a paper or a place online that people really won't see or notice. And it was really important, because of the nature of these sort of viral conspiracy theories, it was important to our client that if there was to be a settlement, that it actually have an effect on clearing his name. And that meant finding ways of making sure that the retraction and apology would be prominent, and that it would be noticed. And so rather than just having it appear in the newspaper or on a section of the website. It was important to us that it appear in some of the social media platforms that have been instrumental to spreading the conspiracy theory, Twitter being one of those. And that is why that you see the Washington Times is sending out the retraction, you know, not just on a post on its website, but also through messages on Twitter. We have found that in our work representing individuals who become the victims of these false conspiracy theories, that one of the real difficulties today is finding an effective mechanism for counter speech. I mean, traditionally, our constitutional order and our First Amendment values hold that the way you fight speech is with speech. And if somebody says something that's not true about you, the best remedy for that is a platform for speech that helps you sort of rebut or argue against that. The difficulty is the way the media environment is fragmented and the way that social media can spread information quickly without the same kind of editorial standards that once sort of governed and served as a gatekeeper for media publication of information. It becomes really difficult to fight back against false facts once they're spread far enough. And so one of the things that we think is really important is finding ways to channel these retractions or apologies out into the different platforms that have served as vehicles to spread the false information in the first place.
Yeah, I used to think the internet was self-healing, you know, and that a correction would go further than the false information. But I don't believe that anymore. It is clear that, you know, truly fake stories can spread virally and the truth can barely keep up. So that's why you're saying it was important for this correction, this apology to go out via Twitter, via Facebook, hopefully spreading socially, right?
Yeah, that's the idea. And, I think that it's a real challenge today to apply this sort of the old models of using communication strategies or a legal defamation strategy to fight back against conspiracy theories that spread. You know, it might start on, you know, one post on a Reddit forum or a 4chan forum and then spread and then start spreading through Twitter. And then it makes its way on and appears on, you know, a couple of news sites, and then suddenly it's everywhere. And so as you work backwards through that chain, if you actually want to reach the individuals in the communities that believe this information to be true, you have to figure out ways to get the message and to get the true and correct information into those communities. So it's more challenging than just having an apology or retraction, you know, appear in the traditional places and forums in which they have.
It sure is rare to see a news organization saying sorry, though. You know, it's one thing to run a correction. It's another thing for the Times to say, we apologize to Mr. Rich and his family. Was that especially important to them?
I think it was meaningful for Aaron and for the Rich family. It was the first time they've received an apology for any of the lies that have been spread about them. In particular, I think these lies have really had an effect on Aaron. I mean, Aaron has worked for the same defense contractor from basically the day he graduated from college. He works, in assisting the defense operations and national security of the United States. He's as patriotic of an American as you will find. And the accusation that he has engaged in theft and essentially, you know, treasonous activity in stealing documents and providing them to a hostile foreign power in exchange for money, lying about his own brother's murder, engaging in obstruction of justice. I mean, these cut to the core of his being as a person. They cut to his integrity. It interferes with his ability to do his job. It interferes with his ability to hold a security clearance, which he needs to do in order to do his job over the long run. And so these have had a real effect on him outside of the fact that it interferes with his ability to grieve for the loss of his only brother, the guy who was the best man at his wedding and somebody he remained close with throughout his life. So I think for all those reasons, the apology was meaningful and was important to him. And he said, he said that he accepts that apology and he's grateful for what the Washington Times has said.
There are some other lawsuits still pending. Let's get into that right after a quick break. Hey, welcome back to the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter here with Mike Gottlieb. He's the attorney representing Aaron Rich, the brother of slain DNC staffer Seth Rich. Aaron Rich and Gottlieb have been using the courts to try to reach justice, challenging people that have been spreading conspiracy theories and lies about the Rich family. So, Mike, there are some other lawsuits still pending. You've settled with the Washington Times. They've apologized for spreading this stuff. But you mentioned earlier Ed Batowski, a Texas businessman. You mentioned a fringe internet activist named Matt Couch. What's going on with these other lawsuits, this other legal action?
We have moved to have the Washington Times dismissed from the lawsuit. It's the same lawsuit. Matt Couch, Ed Batowski, and America First Media remain defendants in the suit. They have moved to defend the suit on personal jurisdiction grounds only. So they haven't said our claims are insufficient. They've said this court shouldn't be able to hear the claims against them. And that motion remains pending in front of our judge here in D.C. Once that motion is decided, we would move forward, assuming that we prevailed in that motion, we would move forward with discovery. And we very much look forward to discovery in this case because it will allow us to ask for testimony and documents from these defendants to probe how they came up with this this story that they concocted, apparently concocted about Aaron in the summer of 2018. But the other reason we look forward to it is because they have the same opportunity to ask for documents and testimony from Aaron. And so this is where the court system becomes a very powerful tool in testing the veracity of these claims and allowing for some objective way to measure truth and falsity is they'll have the opportunity to ask for documents, for social media accounts, for bank records to test these allegations. They're not going to find anything that substantiates their claims because they're made up, but they will have the opportunity to ask for them. And when there is a trial in this case, that evidence will be presented and it'll be aired publicly, and it gives our client the opportunity to clear his name. And that's really what Aaron is most looking forward to in this case, is the opportunity to once and for all have a chance to clear his name publicly in a way that definitively shows he had nothing to do with any of this and these stories are a fabrication.
Do you think this strategy applies in other really heinous cases of fake news and conspiracy theories as well? Are the courts the right mechanism for trying to clean up some of the horrors that spread on the internet?
You know, I think it can be a powerful tool in the right case. And so you have seen examples of victims of these kinds of conspiracy theories suing. Some of those cases have been settled, like Chobani's case against Alex Jones and InfoWars. Some of those cases continue, like the Sandy Hook and Parkland lawsuits that exist today are testing some of the same theories. And so I think the courts do offer an opportunity for people in certain circumstances. One of the problems, there are numerous problems with using the courts to try to fight back against these conspiracy theories. One is this kind of litigation is very time consuming, it's very costly, and most ordinary people who become the subject of a conspiracy theory just don't have the wherewithal to pursue a multi-year piece of litigation in order to clear their name. Another limitation because of how slow the process can be is by the time you actually get to a trial, by the time you get to that sort of public reckoning with a trial and a decision to a jury of peers, a lot of people may have forgotten about the conspiracy theory because it may have gained prominence a couple of years before. There are ways in which this is a highly imperfect mechanism, but it really is the only mechanism for finding an independent arbiter of the factual content of the conspiracy theory to make a determination of whether it was true or false, and if it was either knowingly or recklessly false, giving the people who have brought that suit an opportunity for some form of justice.
And when does this edge up against First Amendment rights? In what instances will a newspaper like the Washington Times tell you to, stick it where the sun don't shine?
I think there are important First Amendment values that apply in every defamation case. Sometimes they reside at the core of the case, and sometimes they are at the outer margins of the case. And so there are a number of different doctrines that protect publishers. One of those doctrines is the opinion doctrine, and that doctrine essentially although it's somewhat complicated in its application, it essentially holds that the expression of opinion is generally considered to be protected, even if that opinion is very offensive or emotionally harmful to people. You can't hold them responsible for publishing an opinion you disagree with. You can hold them responsible for publishing a fact. And so, and in this case, I think this case is a good illustration of the difference between those two things. If all Ed Batowski and Matt Couch had done was say, hey, the circumstances of this murder are highly suspicious. We really think people ought to investigate it. There's a lot of unanswered questions here, and we don't find the explanation that's been given from the D.C. police to be persuasive. You know, that would be constitutionally protected expression. That would be an expression of opinion. Where you cross a line is where you start to make factual representations that are representations that are either true or false and can be verified one way or the other. So, for example, Aaron Rich received money into his bank account. That either happened or it didn't. It didn't happen in this case. We can prove it didn't happen and will if the case goes forward. And so that's an important distinction. There are other First Amendment defenses that are really important. When you have, for example, a public figure that brings a lawsuit, like, for example, President Trump, before he was president, brought certain defamation lawsuits as a public figure. In order to prevail in a defamation suit, you have to satisfy the actual malice standard, which is a higher standard than private figures have to satisfy. It requires a showing of knowledge or reckless disregard for the veracity of statements. And so those are important safeguards that give space to publishers, that give space to free speech. But we think that this lawsuit is an example of one where none of those kinds of defenses and protections will be at issue, because this really is a lawsuit about false factual allegations that were made against Aaron Rich in the process of spreading this conspiracy about Seth.
And does this settlement mean that these conspiracy theories will be put to rest once and for all?
I don't think this settlement does, but I would certainly hope that it has an effect and causes some people who were persuaded by that article in the Washington Times to rethink that. I hope it causes other people that have believed this conspiracy theory to rethink some of their assumptions, that if the Washington Times is willing to admit that they didn't have a factual basis to publish statements like that, that maybe people who assume it to be true ought to rethink it and take a look at the evidence. Mm. And I do think that if the case moves forward to trial, that will present an opportunity for a public airing and a testimony, cross-examination of these witnesses, presentation of important documents that will be able to show in the course of a trial that is subject to all the protections of our constitutional system, the American justice system. That will provide an opportunity to, I think, provide some measure of finality. You know, I recognize there are some people who will never be satisfied and never be convinced, but I think the goal is to try to reach most people who are willing to look at evidence and willing to consider facts different from those that they have believed.
Mike, anything else to add? Anything we should know about the cases like this moving forward?
I think these are really important cases. They are difficult. They're difficult for people to bring. It takes a lot of courage for someone to bring a suit like this, because in bringing it, you recognize that you are opening yourself and your life up to discovery, where they can ask for your communications, they can ask for your bank account statements, they can ask for a lot of personal information about you, and that information becomes public. And so it does take a lot of courage for people like Aaron to be willing to stand up for their reputations, but also to be willing to stand up for the concept that truth matters and facts matter, and it's not acceptable for people to make innocent individuals to make those people tools in their advancement of their own political or ideological narratives. So I think it's important to watch this case and other suits like it as they go forward.
Mike Gottlieb, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Really interesting example of using the courts to seek justice when you've been written about, when you're a private citizen that's been lied about all over the internet. You can check out Oliver Darcy's story on this at cnnbusiness.com. And thanks for joining us on the Reliable Sources podcast. We'll see you this Sunday and every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern time on CNN. Thanks for tuning in.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.